Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, button up with hoodie, right? Going full early millennial, my good buddy and producer extraordinaire, Cameron McCoy. How you doing, friend?
Got the even. It's even a short sleeve shirt, man. I mean, it's like perfect.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Just bite into some of that avocado toast, man. Let's go. Let's go. Kind of a whopper of a show today, and I did not expect it to be. We're recording late on Sunday, and a lot went on this week. We'll really quickly go through what we've been playing. I do know that the formats are, I would say, stale-ish. That's going to change in Historic in like 12 days again. But it's worth kind of talking about. So, Cameron, what have you been up to?
I've been playing some Historic and some Standard. So playing Jeskai Control in Historic. This is the non-Gear Hulk version that's running 4 Teferi, 2 or 3 Narset, and then your Sharks, essentially, for your finishers.
Any Magnum Opus?
No Magnum Opus. None. I should probably be running that. The list that I'm running is running, probably I think is going to be one of the most hated cards, which is the counterspell. I can never remember what it's called. Puts it back into your library.
Memory Lapse.
Memory Lapse. Thank you. An incredibly vicious card that is just creates huge tempo advantage where, even in those late turns, if I can counter whatever they're doing with the Sultai control list or the Arlen's prophecy list or anything along those lines, that sets them back one turn, allows me to activate that Teferi one more time. And then when you get the Teferi ultimate, which happens quite a bit, like I've actually, the removal and everything with this list is so good with Lightning Helix that I can ultimate Teferi more often and then cast a Brainstorm. And it's off to the races. Like, I mean, the game is over with a Teferi ultimate and Brainstorm, So seeing that power level in Historic now compared to even, 2 months ago with Teferi is crazy. On top of that, just dipping my toes into Standard, I have been very, I think like everybody else, uninterested in most of what's going on with Standard. So it seems to me like the perfect time to just screw it. I'm just going to play some decks that interest me, right? So I have been playing essentially anything that I can do with Clever Luminancer, which is the one mana casting cost Magecraft deck. And so this is kind of a Jeskai Magecraft. And this is a total brew on my part, just doing all the Magecraft that I can possibly put into the deck. One that gives me a spirit token, another one that gives everything +1/+1. So just trying to synergize as much as I possibly can. I don't know if Jeskai is the proper one. Like I said, this is a total brew, but I've been having so much fun actually brewing, saying I like this card, I'm going to try to do something with it. And there's such little worry. It's not like I'm doing this with an actual Standard paper deck, so I have most of these cards from just drafting so much. It's actually pretty fun. So anyway, been having a good time. The mana seems right with Jeskai just because you have the Triumph still. That's the only reason I'm doing it. Esper might be a better option, maybe, but having a good time.
And that could be a deck post-rotation. I really can't come up with a rotation that's going to be in October or late September that is going to be more cataclysmic to what a format is. Like, I think Standard's fine right now. It's like 5 reasonable decks. I would say that the bug deck, if it does what it does, you've lost. And that's probably if WotC came out sometime midsummer and said, hey, we're going to change it up just like they did last time and did a, quote, early rotation. Remember that? Where they kind of prematurely banned a few things before rotation just to freshen it up. I think that would actually be pretty cool. And some of these cards, I think, would be nice to be gone. Emergent Ultimatum being one of them. But I would say, like, the weakness in Bug's armor is sometimes that deck just doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
And it just gets rolled by Mono Red and Naya and all this. Well, anyway, that's kind of a discussion for another time. I do think you and I are going to sit down before this fall, look at all the decks and go, what are we going to do? Like, what is this?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of reckoning with, like, Kaldheim and Strixhaven and going, what are the cards in these sets that are actually, you know, there's some slam dunks like Showdown of the Skulls, Goldspan Dragon. Like, to me, those are kind of like slam dunk constructed all-star cards. But then there's some things that we've probably missed, like the commands, you know, that we don't know how good they're going to be or how reasonable they're going to be. So I played a little bit of Historic, and Cameron, I got to be honest with you. I don't necessarily love this format. It's fine. It's fine to sit down and play. Like I said, I've been drafting Strixhaven a lot, and I don't like it as a limited format, but I'm liking limited more than I'm liking constructed. Standard, like I said, is fine. I just feel like I know what's happening. I find myself checking my email a lot while I'm playing standard, which I think is probably the nastiest thing that you could say about it, right? It's not bad. Like I said, if somebody's playing Naya Adventures right now, that's a perfectly fine, you know, there's four or five of them, but you're talking about Jeskai. Like, there's almost no way you should play Jeskai and not cycling, right? And it's been, Jeskai cycling's been around for, I think, 17 years now. I think it's older than my child. That's how long it feels like we've been playing against Jeskai cycling, right? Remember that was a deck whenever Wilderness Reclamation was
crazy.
A deck.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I did listen to you and I put together this green white maverick thing.
Yeah, yeah.
In Historic, and here is my review. Fun but bad.
Yep.
And I mean, I've got like a 50% win rate or something with it, and I got to be honest with you, some of those wins are just my opponent just totally messes up. Some of those wins, though, feel like you just have these like ridiculous draws where it usually involves like some kind of hate card plus the Luminarch Aspirant. And then it's just like, okay, I'm swinging in for a million D damage and I've interfered with your ability to play something. I mean, those are fun moments, but then there are the moments where the deck just doesn't. And man, when this deck doesn't, it really does not at all.
Yeah.
You know, and you just end up playing like a couple of Lovestruck Beasts and dying to attain it back. Or, you know, like there's sometimes where it feels so far below the actual play level that it's alarming. And I'm not talking like I'm losing always to a combo, like a Entain Impact. Like, there have been times where I've been housed by that thing by decks that I should beat. Like, Black-White Vampire mid-range. Like, it's just like, this is the kind of deck I should be able to beat up on, and you cannot. To that end, I did suit up Tainted Pact combo. And I don't know if there's a combo deck I've ever been worse at playing, Cameron. I have flubbed so many times playing this deck where I try and go through the combo and then I mess up or I misclick. I mean, it's like you could play Yakety Sax in the background while I'm playing this deck. It is so, it is a really good deck. Like, and it's not all the way tuned, but, you know, it can be this turn four combo that can't be beaten. And of course, sometimes it doesn't do anything, which that's the case with many combo decks. But man, is it skill intensive. So if you're looking for something that's hard to play, might I suggest this deck?
Okay.
I also don't know how much of it is I'm just bad at the interface. And whenever you're going off with Tainted Pact, you have to like decline drawing every single card that comes up. But the like light that shows that you're running out of time is going the whole time that this is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if I'm just an old man that doesn't like noises. But it's like so distracting to me. I'm just like, can you stop that? Yeah. Yeah, it's not enjoyable at all. So anyway, that's kind of where we're at with Constructed Magic. I don't know. This coming week is going to be kind of my prep week for paper. So I might just be like on a arena sabbatical.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. I mean, it's been your friend for 14 months. You can have a little separation for a little bit. I think that's okay.
Yeah, and boy, we've gone through some rough times.
Right? Yeah. Do you remember last June? Do you remember it?
Yeah, there's moments where I've had very difficult discussions with Arena. My wife was like, maybe you need to step away. And I'm like, but I need to complete this quest. You know, the always ill-fated conversation. Well, if it frustrates you that much, why do you keep doing it?
Right.
Where you know, as the husband, I'm really not willing to admit in that moment, there is something extremely wrong with me. I'm aware of this. You should be aware of this. It's just how it is, okay?
Cameron understands.
Yeah. Yeah, I devote my life to a game that is incredibly heartbreaking and not very rewarding, but that's just what it is, okay?
I have a podcast about it.
Yeah. Let's get out of this segment, come back, and talk about what's happening with Magic, because this has been a big week for the community. All right, Cameron, so I'm interested to hear your interaction with this announcement, because my Twitterverse basically exploded. I know you don't follow the pro scene to the level in which I do, but were you aware that this was going on? Did you see anything about this, or was it just like...
So cursory knowledge is through Twitter. Like, you know, you follow the certain people and you start to see it. So yeah, I would say I'm surprised. Especially that this announcement is coming on the heels of COVID kind of wrapping up. It just seems so strange. Like, well, yeah, you haven't had any tournaments or pro level events because, you know, there's a worldwide pandemic going on. So, yeah. So, like, I'm just really surprised at the timing of it. I guess I'm not that surprised just over the course of the 8 years and just understanding what the pro scene really means here. You know, we've talked about it numerous times. So I guess I'm not surprised by that, just by the timing.
Yeah, I feel like when we get into these conversations, there's a lot of... both things can be true.
Yes, yes.
Did you ever watch the Cloverfield movie by Dan Trachtenberg?
Yeah, 12, right? Yeah.
12 Cloverfield Lane, yes.
There we go.
Spoilers for that movie. Seriously, if you haven't seen it, you should just stop the podcast and go watch it because it's a good movie. Legitimately, good thriller. But at the so they frame the whole movie as, hey, there's an alien invasion and also this guy might be crazy. And it turns out both things are true.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like so many lessons can be learned from that, because I feel like in the internet age, we feel like things can either be one thing or the other. And this has turned into the pro scene is vital or not vital to Magic. And WotC is investing in competitive Magic or not at all and in casual Magic. And I think those things are so extreme and so disparate. And I think maybe we just need to dial it down a minute. I am super bummed that there are no high pro level events really planned, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there haven't been any for 2 years, Cameron, ever since they started chasing this esports.
Yeah.
I'm going to use the expression garbage, you know, where it was like phantom numbers. Oh, esports are so huge. Esports are so huge. Look at Overwatch. And it was just like, not necessarily a proven commodity when you already had a proven commodity. Mm-hmm. And they were so desperate to call it not the Pro Tour anymore, but Mythic Championships. When, sorry to put on my marketing and advertising hat here, but I can't imagine another company going, hey, we've had this name for 25 years. Let's just deep six it. Well, you know what I mean? It's like everyone else is chasing nostalgia, like legitimately attempting it, right?
Yeah.
To a degree which is like alarming. And WotC's like, no, man, no, we're on, you know, and you have all this history, like our Planeswalker points, our DCI numbers, our play history got erased. Remember that? It's just like, why are you guys not investing in what was great before? And that ended like 2 years ago. We did a whole show and talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so them saying, hey, you know, the pro scene is over, it is like, well, whenever you have a Twitch stream that has 3,000 people watching your pro event, you probably already killed it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's a bummer, but it's like, it's kind of already been there for a minute. And I think the pros calling on WotC to be held accountable, while it might come off as maybe a little bit temper tantrum-y, I do think they are correct in that, like, where's the accountability? You guys had a working thing. You destroyed it. And now what? You know, and you're, mm-hmm. you say, oh, it's COVID. And, you know, people didn't watch this like they thought we thought they would. Right. And it's like, well, my dudes, who's to blame for that? You know, you used to watch Star City streams like every weekend, right?
Every weekend.
I used to watch stuff every single weekend. Now I almost never turn on Twitch to watch Magic. And so I don't know if you've seen the official thing from WotC, but they talk about these things like this is just like a ray of revelation. For example, bullet point, in-person play is a unique strength of Magic. Like,
did you learn this in 1994?
Nailed it. Accessibility is important. Digital play is here to stay, and we need to be patient. And it's like, guys, don't come to me when you're a multi-million dollar company and you're like, dude, just be patient. Just be patient. Give us time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how far away are we talking here? A year? Like, legitimately.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like I'm going to get an announcement in a few weeks. And, like, I'm sorry, man, but as a working professional, that's not acceptable. Whether it's a leadership thing or the guys, I don't know, like, if it's a corporate level thing or the leadership at Hasbro. But imagine, Cameron, them going to you and saying, hey, we need you to produce a pilot for this new travel show, and it needs to be, you know, whatever your timetables look like for those things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, can you just be patient? I need another 12 months. How does that go over, right?
Unacceptable, right? Yeah.
Like, I wake up, you know what, guys? Not feeling like teaching today.
Be patient.
Hit me back in about 6 months. Just be patient. Like, putting together a Magic tournament is a freaking calculus problem. You got to be kidding me. You've done this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I just have so many disparate thoughts about this, Cameron. But, like, just do some tournaments. If this costs us Grand Prix, I'm going to be livid because there is no excuse, and you cannot tell me you could not turn a profit on Grand Prix. You cannot tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you were there and you saw even the ones that were, quote, poorly attended, because you and I went to one in Omaha that was one of those.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the Aetherworks Marvel Grand Prix, right?
That thing
was still legal. And the convention center was packed. All those people paid for a hotel. Like, you got to be kidding me. And you didn't make money on that?
Mm-hmm. Please.
Yeah. So, anyway, Cameron, sorry. I just, really upsetting to me. Some people are painting this as, well, they're just transitioning pro play to a thing that focuses on professional level play and goes to more like game centric. And we kind of talked about that before. Like,
sure.
What racing and golf does, where it like focuses on the personalities and transitioning to something like baseball, where the game itself is kind of the star, and like, yeah, there are stars, but it's not as like the focus. Like, the infamous example is, I guess, NBA versus MLB would be a good thing. NBA stars, like, you know what LeBron James looks like, you know who he is, even though you don't watch any NBA, right?
For sure.
I'm just asking, do you know what Mike Trout looks like?
No, I couldn't tell you at all.
Most people outside of Los Angeles couldn't, and he's the best living baseball player, right? And a 100 millionaire, like, rich, the mm-hmm. best in his profession. But baseball, like, doesn't make that apparent. When he walks out, they're not like, here is the best player of the last 8 years. You know what I mean? They just don't do that.
Yeah.
So some people paint it like that. I hope it is that. I hope they have a really nice structure where it's like, hey, we take the top 16 finishers from all the Grand Prix, squish them together. That's a pro event. Then they can, okay, cool. I'm down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if it's a bunch of command fest, this is a problem.
I agree.
Right?
I agree.
Last thing I would say. Sorry, I should have taken notes, Cameron.
Dude.
Because I've
just
got pent-up aggression.
I love it. Just keep it coming.
The discussion about this in community, of like, because of course they mentioned Command Fest, and then it's perpetuated this mythology that WotC only cares about commander players and or casual players, which I would argue are not the same thing. Thank you very much. But also that somehow there's not a Venn diagram in which those things overlap. Almost every legacy player I know plays Commander. Almost every single one. So where do they fit in that Venn diagram? a lot of the other Commander players I know play limited. Where do they fit in that diagram? And casual players, like my brother-in-law, he's a casual player. He buys cards maybe once every other year. Guess who he comes to and ask about what's the best cards to put in my whatever theme deck? Me. So, like, WotC, of course, is going to see that stuff, man. They're going to look at that and go, okay, these people matter because they are our brand ambassadors. And that's not, you know, Nike doesn't sell their high-end shoe to everybody, right? They sell it to these tastemakers, influencers, whatever expression, marketing expression you want to use, right? And I mean, we've been learning about that. We learned about that in college in whatever year, right? Way before YouTubers and Instagram and all that. And this is what WotC wants competitive level play to be. We are the people that are going to be driving the taste of the rest of the community. And that's okay, right? I think that's what they're chasing. But this idea that it's like, oh, nope, no more competitive Magic. They just want everybody to casually play Commander. Like, those Venn diagrams don't overlap is crazy. Yeah. And also, I would say that I hope WotC is not looking at this data and saying, well, we're selling so much Commander, so now it needs to be Command Fest, when they don't really realize, again, how much those Venn diagrams overlap and how much that data might be disingenuous. Like, the famous example of this kind of thing is Microsoft with the 360. They had data that told them everyone is watching Netflix on this device. They're watching Netflix more than they're playing games. So when they launched the Xbox One, the entire first press conference was about nothing but watching Netflix and TV on it. No mention of games, quite infamously. And everybody's like, what in the world just happened?
Yeah.
Right? And if you're an executive that doesn't play video games, you don't realize, yeah, you're going to have it on Netflix more than you're playing a game, but that doesn't mean you bought it for Netflix.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe if you didn't kill Legacy, maybe Commander wouldn't be as popular.
That's a thought.
Okay, now we've reached the stage where I'm like the dude from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where I've got the cork board and all the string.
You're the wild card.
Basically, all it points back to is the reserve list, right? Like, no kidding.
And this is our 300-part series on the reserve list.
Every episode, it's all because of the stupid reserve list, right? But anyway, I hope the pro system changed for the better. WotC's announcement is kind of insulting and patronizing. I don't think they're that interested in, like, pushing casual over competitive. I think they want both to flourish. And we should hold them accountable, because this announcement is a word salad that amounts to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That is my overall thesis. Next time, I will have more organized notes for you, Cameron. Did you want to add anything to that, buddy?
No, dude. I think you did a thorough and in-depth summation.
Dude, I wish you could have been next to me while I was, like, I was mowing the lawn yesterday.
Oh, no.
And I was like, thinking about all my thoughts, and I even then I was like, man, I cannot get my mind straight, like, organized on this. And I of course look like an insane person because I'm mowing the lawn talking to myself. The neighbors are like, what is he talking about? My wife's like, just Magic, it's fine. All right, Cameron, so kind of surprisingly, Historic Anthologies is going to hit us in, like, a couple weeks here.
Mm-hmm.
And we have several of the cards. This is a much more impactful group of cards than our previous Historic Anthology, which is to say they are reasonable Magic the Gathering cards.
I was
going to
say, yeah.
Go ahead, take it away, man. What do you think of this list? What's the cards
sticking out
to you?
It's a grab bag. I mean, there's some that I'm thinking, like, eh, okay, they're whatever, they're cute, and they might have a place in a very specific deck for a pet card sort of thing. But we're getting the commands from, is that Cons? I don't even remember. Yeah. Which is kind of cool. We're getting things that I think are extremely important, like Relic of Progenitus. And the one that's, like, the biggest head scratcher, which is Stifle. And I think that's going to be pretty impactful. In fact, out of all of these cards, that's the one that I'm, like, most, like, really eyebrow raised, sort of surprised with. Obviously, I'm going to be picking up my four of that specifically. But there's some other ones that, you know, are cool. Like, I think like the blue-white aggro is going to probably jam Ojutai's command because returning a creature back to the battlefield is not nothing, you know? So, yeah, overall, like, this is the sort of historic anthology set that I think is worthwhile other than the previous one, which was, you know, you spent $25 on four cards.
Yeah, and so, bizarrely, I think the card that maybe won't get the credit it deserves in this is Ray of Revelation, because that's a card that hasn't, like, been a knockout, but in this format, there's a couple decks where that, I mean, it wrecks them. Obviously, the Auras deck, it's a big deal, but just there are still some enchantment-centric, you know, Doom Foretold-style decks that, you know, you can use this. However, Relic of Progenitus, strict upgrade over whatever that current one is that I can never remember. It's not good. It's not good, whatever it is. Ancient Grudge has been a staple across multiple formats forever. It sees a ton of play in Vintage, obviously, because of the Moxen and stuff like that. You're going to die to a Tarkus command. That feels like a pretty straightforward inclusion into green-red aggro. Maybe that is not using Collected Company because you're adding a miss. The same problem kind of exists with Dromoka's command in the Maverick style decks.
Sure.
That being said, that deck is very hard up from removal. Right now, my sideboard has like Declaration of in Stone in it, and it's god awful. Like there are a lot of moments where you're like, I have to hit a Skyclave Apparition off of this Collected Company, or I'm 100% dead right now.
Yep.
Right. So Dromoka's command is interesting removal, all right, Cameron, let's just talk. I'm gonna try and build Dragonstorm. Like, I'm just gonna try
do that. Yeah,
It's probably garbage, but a ton of fun. And Vault Scourge, look, I mean, it's got a lot of format credentials.
Yeah, I've had a lot of words with Vault Scourge.
Yeah, I mean. Vault Scourge is kind of like that guy that always ends up on the championship teams. And you're like, why is that guy always there?
It's so true. Sure.
Like, on its face, not really that much to get excited about. Now, look, Vorniclex is one of those that, like, shows up here and there in, like, kind of combo-y type things. Urabrask is a similar thing. But this is a much more cohesive and good package. There's not, like, the freaking, you know, Hondens or whatever. You know, where it was just like, why are these all here together? Last thing I'll mention is Intangible Virtue has been banned in block constructed because it was too good in that block. So don't think it's going to get banned in this format. But look, WotC deserves a lot of praise for making this a better set of cards. And I think there's still some to be released. I think there's still like three or four more. But Stifle, I'm interested to see what that does because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of Storm cards. So maybe in something like Jeskai, you're playing it in the side, or in Rogues, you're playing it in the side. But I don't know that past that, because there's only, like, the key with Stifle and Legacy is that you're nuking fetch lands, right? And hitting a Fabled Passage isn't quite as hot as that. So
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah. Big thumbs up for me. What about you?
Overall, this is what I think there's more value here. I'll just say that. Like, I think a lot more of these cards are going to have at least a role player sideboard sort of, you know, spot in your deck.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we'll review Historic after that comes out. Cameron, you and I have got a Space Hopper to talk about. We'll be right back after this. So, Cameron, in the least surprising turn of events in Spikefeed history, you and I have both purchased the Mass Effect Legendary Edition. And I give me your review. You know this series better than I do. I have only played two. I think you have played all of them, right? Or you've at least played three.
Two and three are the only ones that I've played. And the reason I'm playing this is strictly for Mass Effect 1, really, because that was the one that I was most interested in, the one that, like, I remember when it was released on the Xbox, I was like, why don't I own an Xbox? Like, this is the game that I should be playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And have you played Andromeda?
I didn't, no. Just based off your review, I was kind of just waiting for that one to be, you know, worth $5 and then go pick it up. But I still have not picked it up.
So, yeah, and I would say, because it's not in this collection, it's not terrible. I feel the same way about Anthem. Like, I feel like people are kind of, like, overly harsh on those games.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not as good as the other BioWare games, which is a tough, you know, tough act to follow. Like, but I played 10 hours of Andromeda before I dropped off or something like that, and it felt like a lot of, it felt a lot like Dragon Age Inquisition to me. So, hey, take it or leave it. But anyway, what's your thoughts on the Legendary Edition?
So I've only put maybe an hour and a half in this weekend so far. But overall, especially because I can compare it to the original, which I also have on my PC. I downloaded that one a while ago and picked it up because it was part of the EA Play thing as well. And there is a noticeable improvement in both frame rate, texture quality, all of those things, and it looks really, really, really good. I am, like, super impressed with, like, what they've done with that, like, original engine, essentially. Yeah, and I am overall into it. And yeah, like I said before, Mass Effect 2 for me is, like, one of the best games of that decade. I mean, it came out in 2010, and I think it just has held up as, like, seriously, just this, like, to me, almost perfect sort of video game that hits every single checkbox for a Cameron McCoy game as far as space opera, music, great setting, interesting characters, great writing. Like that one was really, really good. So I don't really know anything about Mass Effect because I kind of wanted to avoid all spoilers to go back and revisit that game, and I just have never had that chance. And so to now have that chance, I'm looking forward to it. But overall, if it is anything like Mass Effect 2 as far as gameplay, quality of writing, and, you know, the relationships that you can develop, I mean, I'm all for it. And BioWare at that time, 07 to 12, they were on fire, making, I think, some incredible RPGs, like both not only Mass Effect, but the Dragon Age stuff as well.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird to think that the first Dragon Age and Mass Effect 2 were so close to each other.
Yeah.
In release day, because those games were, like, both exceptional. And I would say that the thing with Dragon Age and Mass Effect, I would lay the same criticism, and that some of it feels very paint by numbers of that genre. But what they've done is they've made certain characters so engaging within that kind of framework,
yeah,
that it makes you care about this kind of... I mean, because whenever you are playing Mass Effect 1, it does feel like, okay, they put Star Trek and Halo together, right? Like,
sure.
You know, it does have those moments. And I'm not trying to bash the lore because I think they do a good job with it. But it feels like they sat down in a branding meeting and said, let's make it this, and kind of hit these notes and make the soundtrack like Blade Runner or whatever, and kind of go from there. Before I move on with my critique, I do want to just set aside, I mean, legitimately one of the top three video game soundtracks ever, ever, ever.
So good.
Like, it's really good. And I was kind of poo-pooing the idea of buying this collection because I have this trilogy on my Xbox just kind of sitting there. And then I watched their trailer, which is like, you know, full trailer from 15 years ago, like choir and crescendoing music and explosions. And then they get done with it, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm buying that, right? Like, and like you, I really had some curiosity about going back to the first one because I owned a PlayStation 3. Mass Effect 1 eventually came out on the PlayStation 3, but it was part of like a, you had to buy the box set of the 3, whatever. And it's kind of interesting. I never finished Mass Effect 2. I played a lot of it on PS3, and somebody on a podcast said this, and I said, hey, that happened to me too, so I wonder if it was something with the game. My PS3 died playing Mass Effect 2, and I had to send it off. And
oh, wow.
I killed my PS3 twice, just due to heating or whatever. So, but anyway, so I never got to finish it, and then I just picked it up on backwards compatibility like 2 years ago and just kind of pick it up and play it here and there, but I was always kind of like, I go back through it. And I got to be honest with you, even though I know Mass Effect 2 is kind of a refresh, I always feel kind of behind with what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Mass Effect 1 is really nice that I can be like, oh. And everybody's like, you know, there was a comic at the beginning of Mass Effect. It's like, okay. So I'm supposed to spend 2 minutes on a comic, a digital comic, and that's going to make up for this previous 40-hour experience? Like, I don't know about all that. They do a great job cleaning it up. I will say that the first game, the combat is still not a straight up shooter. So there's times where you like aim your cursor at somebody, pull the trigger, and then it acts like it doesn't hit them or all that, because it's still doing like RPG style stuff instead of like the actual shooters. The other place it shows its age is the map design is really unclear at times, and you don't know where you're supposed to go. Where they really cleaned that up in Mass Effect 2. But here's the thing that's really refreshing and why you should like look to buy this if you have never played these games, is that it is such a complete and full package, and it brings you back to a time when games were like, hey, everything is here. We might sell you some DLC that's story DLC that can add context to the experience, but we're not going to hit you up for anything. We're not going to hit you up for an XP boost. We're not going to hit you up for some skins in the middle of the game. You know, it's like, this is the experience we want you to have. Do you want to spend 30 minutes on it? You can make some progress. Do you want to spend 3 hours on it? Man, you're going to make a lot of progress.
Yep.
Right? And it's just like this super flexible, engaging, single-player experience. And they just don't make them like that anymore. And I really liked Returnal. However, I did have like a patching issue. Did I tell you about this?
No.
So the game doesn't have a save feature, so you have to suspend the system, which for me isn't that big of a deal, but for some people it is, and I understand that. But I did an update, and the update put my progress back to my initial run. So, like, ooh. I died, like, and this is only, like, the third time I died, but then and then they gave me the cutscene for my original, like, hey, this is the first time you died. And I was like, what the heck? And so I found out this is kind of a thing. So it's like, okay, I really like this game, but I'm just going to hold off
until
they get this all cleaned up.
Yeah,
it's going in my Cyberpunk pile of, please get this patched, and then I will get back to
June.
You. Yeah. A.K.A. June.
Yeah.
But, dude, it's not going to be that crazy to think that I just shoot through all three of these, you know, pun intended, Mass Effect games. How did they mess this up so badly?
Dude, yeah. And that's the thing, like, I'm kind of scared but so morbidly curious about Andromeda, right? Because I wish I could have experienced it in some ways when it was initially released before all the patches, because it sounded like it was just hot mess, you know, like straight up. But even like the third one, like by the end, like they really did market it in one way. Upset a lot of people because, you know, there's so much messaging around like your choices over the last three games now have mattered, and kind of.
yeah, I think they ended up doing a patch. I will say, supposedly all the DLC is in this except for one. So when you watch the trailer, it says over 40 DLC. It doesn't say all the DLC.
Oh, interesting.
And the reason is one of them, the source code has been lost forever. So how much of a bummer is that? It's just gone.
That's
and they
crazy.
Can't ever get to it again. So it's just not a comprehensive, you know, whereas if you look at something like Skyrim, they say all the DLC. That's not the case here.
Oh, so crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. I know the game preservationist in me, the it belongs in a museum guy, is pretty bummed out by that. But yeah, of all the games that are coming out, even if you're like really hot for Ratchet and Clank and you really want to get the most out of your next gen system, if you haven't played these Mass Effect games, like,
they're worthwhile.
They're worthwhile. Yeah. Even if you have to like jump to two, because I will fully admit, even like, because I'm only like 4 hours in the first one, there's some serious jank. right? There's some serious jank, but still very much worth it. Also, please do this. Please do this for Dragon Age.
Oh, please. My gosh, right? Yes, please. I don't want to dust off the PS3 again.
Just Dragon Age Origins is one of my, like, it's one of the few role-playing games that I played entirely twice. And that's, like, pretty small company. I just think that game is real good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey. Anyway, Mass Effect, hot news. You heard it here first. Good video game series. Yeah. And, like, it's like, yeah, you can get it for $50-$60 and it's probably 150 hours worth of your...
Oh, easy. Yeah. 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 With all that DLC, for sure.
Right on, man. So, anyway, if someone would like to get at you and talk about if you should be Paragon or Renegade, where could they find you, Cameron?
It's all on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @Curtis Now. Our official show feed is @SpikeBeatMTG. We will check you guys next week.
Always Paragon.